Gabriel program. You are cleared for departure. Have a good flight.
The Christopher Gabriel program begins now.
About to fall, the people just call it the hole in the wall.
This is your 50,000 watt sports leader in Fresno, the Central Valley, and for bike riders now complaining they can't find the right helmet to wear when they're out on the road. 940 ESPN Fresno.com. Your 3-hour tour begins right now. 6 minutes, 41 seconds past the hour of 3 p.m. Pacific Daylight Saving Time. I'm the host of the program, Christopher Gabriel, delighted to be with you this afternoon. Warm afternoon, not as bad as it's going to be a little bit later in the week, and certainly on the weekend. The Greek Festival is coming this weekend at St. George. Yasu! I can't wait. Kopi's going to be in. I've told Kopi already, if you don't bring either souvlaki or lukumavas, don't even show yourself in this studio. It's from one Greek to another. Producer of the program, Gonzo, have you had lukumavas? I feel like I need to, like, kind of walk you over as a Greek, you know, to a Mexican. You know, you've talked to me about different types of food. I feel like I need to walk you to the lukumavas booth and just say, your first order is on me. Do you like walnuts? Do you like pecans? Okay, but walnuts, basically, do you like honey? And do you like soft, fluffy, doughy things? Yeah, you'll love this. I'm just going to tell you right now, you're going to love it. They just don't even give it a second thought. You want to weigh in during the program? We'd love to have you. 844-940-3776. You can follow me on Twitter. I hope you do. At CG Program. You can follow Gonzo as well. You can email the program, CGP at 940ESPNFresno.com. And before we give you the rundown, we're going to tell you, I'm holding, you hear these? Okay, that's the official sound. That's the official sound of game day live. See, those three words in this building, you can only contractually, if we're talking about something, we're talking about the Fresno State football on Saturdays, as soon as you mention game day live, you have to say it that way. Just, Gonzo, please remember that. You can't just say game day live. You can't do that. The owners will come running down the hall. I'm just going to warn you right now. They will run down the hall. But the reason I mention this is because in my hands right now, of course, the first game is at the L.A. Coliseum, the newly renovated L.A. Coliseum. If you haven't seen the pictures, it is absolutely gorgeous. And, of course, Fresno State taking on the Southern California Trojans, 7:30 p.m. national television, ESPN. It's the only game in the entire nation that will be going on at night on Saturday the 31st. But on the 7th of September, that will be a 7:30 p.m. start time in Bulldog Stadium. The Golden Gophers from the University of Minnesota are coming in. It is our first home Game Day Live. We'll be doing Game Day Live down in Los Angeles, and we've got passes for you. We've got passes for you. You can come to our building and you can get them, but here is the rule. We always tell you this every year because so many people want to come. All of you who've been coming to Game Day Live for years, you know that this is it's the biggest organized party at Fresno State football games. It's great fun. Live music. It's music, a lot of music, and a lot of great guests. It's hosted by yours truly and Cam Morrell. Cam's going to be on the program in a little while. And, of course, you'll hear from Paul Leffler during the broadcast. You'll hear from Coach Pat Hill. Great guests that have ranged from Bill Romanowski to Derek Carr to David Carr to Jose Ramirez. I mean, you name it, we get them on the program. But the thing that we ask is two passes, which gets four people in, two passes per person when you come to our lobby to get game day live passes. And you can get them here at the station, 1415 Fulton Street. You can get them at the coaches show, which is the first coaches show is going to be next Wednesday night. It is back at the Doghouse Grill. We are excited about that. And I'll be doing a number of my Friday shows. I believe four of the six Friday home games, I will be doing my program as I always do every year at the meat market out in North Fresno, but right near River Park. And we'll have I'll be out there with either Luis or maybe Vivian, maybe Bobby, maybe Joe Gomez. But we'll be out there giving away free breakfast burritos as well as game day live passes. So a lot of different ways for you to get involved here. Did you have something? Oh, are we okay? I thought that maybe the station was, you know, like there was like a bomb scare and we were on our way out the door and you were trying to alert me to it. That's what I figured. That's, well, you know, again, that's who you are. That's, yeah, but that wouldn't tell me much because you've done that when you've, you know, needed to get a glass of water or something too. You've, exactly right. So, you know, it's nice to know that the rest of us in the building would take care of each other and you would just say, I'm out of here. Bye-bye. Okay, well, you do that anyway. You knock on the door when you come in. So that's a problem. Well, I think what you're trying to say is you're out for yourself and that's it. Yeah, I bet the Tomahawk would come with you, though. Yeah, the Braves Tomahawk. On the program today, bottom of the hour, we'll talk with Tony Diodato, Tony D., Talk a little baseball. We'll talk a lot of things on our mind. Cam Worrell coming in. I want to talk with Cam a little bit about the whole Antonio Brown helmet thing. And I'm tired of Antonio Brown. I'm tired of the helmet thing. He's at practice. He's not at practice. Oh wait, no. He's in Arizona. No. Now he's not at practice. Oh, no. We're all good. It, you know, the party line from Mike Mayock yesterday, I thought put everything in order when he essentially said, we're done here. Either AB is all in or he's not. Got 93 guys working their butts off and either he's in or he's out. And Drew Rosenhaus, his agent, talking about how it's a safety issue. Hey, you know what? For 53 players on every NFL team, it's a safety issue for them too. They have, including players like Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers, who were very protective of their own helmets. They were very much against having to get rid of their old helmet that they liked, or as Tom Brady pointed out very cleverly, you know, I wore this helmet in the four Super Bowls, by the way. But they've all managed to move on with a new helmet, and this is just a classic ABDVA distraction from AB. So I get the safety angle. I get that he wants his helmet. But the rule seems to work for the vast majority, if not every NFL player, the 1,500 or so that are out there, except for Antonio Brown. So Cam Worrell at 405. My old friend Paul Ladwig stopping by. Have a little golf talk with Mr. Ladwig. He has some interesting stuff to share with all of you. Top five at 5 at about 5:05. 5:25. We're going to talk briefly about the coach of the University of Louisiana. And I'm not talking about Louisiana State. I'm not talking about Ed Orgeron and LSU. What I'm talking about, or who I'm talking about, is Billy Napier, University of Louisiana. He has a very interesting idea of what he wants his current players to do. And I'm going to bury the lead on this intentionally, but Gonzo, I'm going to tell you, I think it's one of the dumbest things I've ever heard. And we'll just leave it at that. It's a coach that has asked his players to do something that both screams of irony as well as just stupidity. And so we'll leave it at that. And then the head coach of Fresno State soccer, women's soccer, is Brian Swashka. And we call him Coach Z. And they are getting ready to take on, I believe, the Oregon Ducks this week. We'll talk with Coach Z. And, of course, one more thing as well. You can always call the program, 844-940-3776. All right. This is something. Let's talk a little baseball, can we? So you heard the story, certainly. You certainly heard the story that Ronald Acuna hits a deep fly ball, and he does what so many players do now. And he saw his home run shot, and he stood at home plate, kind of held the bat sort of up in the air at about a 50 or 55 degree angle, and then just, you know, sort of dropped it and admired it, and then realized, oh boy, that's not going to be a home run. That's not going to be a home run. That should be me standing on second base for a double, and it's not even going to be that. I'm going to be standing on first base with a single. This happened in the third inning of their game against the Dodgers. Braves ended up rallying to beat the Dodgers, but at the time, the Braves were trailing 3-0. So again, ball goes deep to right. He's watching it, and you know he's admiring his work. Generally, I don't have a problem with the admiring the home run. I don't have a problem with the bat flip. You know how I feel about that. I'm good with that. But the ball hit the brick at the top of the 16-foot-high wall in SunTrust Park and bounces back to center fielder for the Dodgers, A.J. Pollock, and he gets it back into the infield just as Acuna is getting to first base. Acuna says, and I'm quoting, "I obviously wasn't thinking." Well, the Braves manager, Brian Snitker, he then pulls Acuna from the game in the following inning, saying that, you know, essentially you got to run. Well, he didn't say it. That's what he says. You got to run. It's not going to be acceptable here. As a teammate, you are responsible for 24 other guys. That name, I love this, that name on the front is a lot more important than the name on the back of that jersey. You can't do that. Let's start with that. Let's take your love of the Braves out of this for a moment. I don't care who it is. I'm okay with, as I said a moment ago, I'm okay with admiring home runs. I'm okay with flipping the bat. I like player to show a little character, show a little charisma. I'm okay with all that. I go completely against all the so-called purists about you can't do that because you know what? If you do that, you're going to get plunked next inning. That makes great sense to me. Guy flips a bat, and that gets him a 95-mile-an-hour fastball in the shoulder or in the back or over his head or behind his back. I don't care for any of that. But when you hit it, you darn well better be sure that ball is clearing the wall, especially when you have a 16-foot wall in right field at the Braves Park. I think that Snitker was absolutely correct in doing what he did. I think he was correct because not only did he send a message to Acuna, but he sent a message to every player on the Braves team saying, look, we all know that he is a great player. There's no two ways about it. But the rule that goes for player number 25 goes for him as well, and that's a play that Acuna will not make that mistake again, not a chance.
No, and like you said, I think if you got to be sure that ball is going over the wall. It's going to be a home run, and that's why you started and stared and looked at it. Now, if it's going to be a debate of whether the ball was going to be in foul territory or in fair play, then I kind of understand, you know, the players that are kind of jogging, going, like, ah, stay. But usually they do that when it's a pretty sure home run or foul ball. Acuna, again, like I told you, it was a sense of instead of having a runner on second and third, no outs with Ozzie Albies coming up to bat, now you have a runner on third, a runner on first. Acuna then gets thrown out at second trying to steal and compensate for what he did. Now you have one man out, your pitcher standing on third, and then you end up in the inning with no runs and your pitcher having stood out there the entire inning in a hot summer day in Atlanta.
You can't, right. That's all spot on. And, you know, this is one of those things where you look at the standings and you look not only at what's going on in the game at that moment. But you think bigger picture, right? You're thinking about where everybody is at right now, and I'm looking at the current standings. Atlanta Braves are on top. They're doing fine, but they're 5.5 ahead of the Nationals. One doesn't assume that the Nationals are going to catch them. But still, the way baseball is and the way the National League is this year in terms of how many teams are grouped for the wild card, you cannot have a player have a singular moment of stupidity that maybe it costs you a playoff or maybe it costs you being the home team in the playoffs. And that's the kind of thing that come the final week of September, we're way ahead of the game here, but let's just say it's the final game of September and the game doesn't go the Braves' way yesterday, and that was a significant moment in it, and the Braves are suddenly tied with the Nationals or a game ahead. This is all anybody's going to be talking about when they if they review why the Braves didn't get home field advantage. They're going to make the playoffs, but that's all anybody would talk about is that one moment. And it wouldn't come down to that one moment, but that's one moment that it shouldn't have been a factor.
Yeah, and now putting my Braves hat on in that situation. Well, when it happened, again, they don't have the camera on the batter. So the ball's hit, you're yelling, go, get out, get out, get out, get out, get out. It doesn't get out. And now they just show Acuña on first. And I'm like, how is he just on first? That ball was in the air for a really long time.
Right.
I understood why Freed, the pitcher, was on third and didn't get home because he had to stay in case the ball looked like it could have been caught. But aside from that, I'm like, why isn't he on second? And then next thing you know, they just say, hey, the left fielder is moving to center. The Duvall's coming in
and
place.
And what you just said, don't you wonder when you don't see what happened at home plate at first, at least when I'm watching a game, the first thing I wonder is, did the guy pull a hamstring?
Or
did the guy get injured going down the line?
And once he got taken out of the game, me and my cousin, that's the first thing we're asking each other, like, is he hurt?
Right.
Please tell me he's not hurt, because that's a significant blow for the Braves that have Ender Inciarte, Nick Markakis, and Dansby Swanson, three of their starters in the injured list right now.
Exactly. So coming up next, we're going to take this moment, this singular moment, and look at baseball players, a lot of them, from the past, the very recent past, like Pete Rose, like Lou Piniella in managing, like Goose Gossage, and weave in what they're saying, how they view today's Major League Baseball. And let's just put it this way, they don't mince words. That's next. This is the CGP.
You're listening to the Christopher Gabriel Program on 940 ESPN. Christopher Gabriel returns.
Native Minnesotan, Mr. Dylan. Coming up in about 10 minutes, Native Californian, Mr. Diodato. They share one very big thing in common. Bet you didn't know what Dylan and Diodato share in common. Oh, I'm going to tell you. Last name, first letter, it's huge. Huge. Tony's sitting around right now going, yeah, that's about all we... Okay. A lot of baseball players are lamenting the fact that they don't believe their beloved game is still their beloved game. And there's a couple of different ways to look at this. Number one, baseball evolves. Hockey, football, basketball evolves. They all evolve. For better or for worse, the games evolve. And guys who grew up in the era of the Joe Maddens, the Goose Gossages, the Pete Roses, the Lou Piniellas, people who are weighing in on baseball right now, not so much Joe Maddon. Charlie Manuel's another one. Charlie Manuel is saying, and a lot of these guys feel this way about this subject, most of the guys that go up to the plate just try to hit home runs. You hear Lou Piniella saying, I managed 3,400 games in the big leagues, and never once did I put on a full shift on anybody, not once, and I think I won a few games without having to shift. Goose Gossage, I can't watch these games anymore. It's not baseball. It's unwatchable. A lot of the strategy of the game, the beauty of the game, it's all gone. I think that Goose is going a little overboard. Is it baseball the way he remembers it when he was with the Yankees and before the Yankees, the White Sox? No, it's a different game. Baseball is experimenting with different things, using an automated system to call balls and strikes in the Atlantic League, which is an independent minor league. Everything today, one of the things that I don't like, every single thing is measured. I don't care about exit velocity. I don't care about launch angle. Did the man put the ball in play and get on base? Did the man put the ball out of the ballpark? That's what I care about. I don't care about those other things. So the analytics, like them or lump them, they're here. They're not going away. They're here to stay. I talked to somebody a little earlier today in this building, saying, I don't have time for social media. Well, I'll tell you, if you are an adult and you work, you better find time in your company for social media, because all the days of, I don't care about Twitter. What is a twit? Well, there's people making six figures. There's people using that to try to beat other companies, from universities to Fortune 500 companies to Silicon Valley, which certainly includes Fortune 500 companies, to broadcast entities, to theaters, to music companies, architectural firms, right down the line, everybody's using it. And baseball is as well. League-wide attendance right now, down 800,000 people from last year. Now, last year's baseball attendance was 69.7 million, lowest figure in 15 years. Yankees, they're on pace to see about 160,000 fewer fans than last year. But when you look at that number, we're talking a couple thousand people a game. Yankees are making money hand over fist in their newer Yankee Stadium. But I'll just say this, that the game of baseball has evolved. You don't see the hit and runs. You don't see moving guys up. You don't see as many sacrifice flies. You're going to see a guy come up and try to park one as often as somebody's trying to hit a sacrifice fly. But when I hear Goose Gossage, Gonzo, when I hear him say, I can't watch these games anymore, it's not baseball, it's unwatchable, I'm sorry, I think that's way overboard. Maybe for his liking, because he wants baseball to still be in the late 1970s, 1980s, early 1990s, but this is 2019, and baseball is the same, but a lot of things have changed. Baseball still is watchable. I think what is unlistenable is the incessant need to break down every stat, to have a Tim Kurchin, who I absolutely love listening to, or anybody else in the booth. Okay, now that was a 17-pitch at bat. We're now going to look at the pitch sequence. I don't care. How many people watching really want to see the 17-pitch pitching sequence? I don't. Maybe you do, and that's fine, but I think most people don't, and I think baseball is too dialed in to all of the data. The game is still the game, and the game is still great.
See, my issue, and something I've always said to people is, Why wasn't baseball's always changed? Sports has always changed. In the early 1900s, how far were their home run walls? Sometimes it was like a 400-foot wall.
Yankee Stadium was like 435, 440 to left center.
Those guys are probably telling the guys in the 60s, like, what are you doing? Why did they have to bring in the home run walls for you guys? Why are they at 350, 340 now, not at 450, 500? So if you go that route, but aside from the shift, I don't understand the entire hate on the shift. And for someone to say it takes a strategy out, no, like for me, it's even more strategy, because now as a hitter, I know if I go that way, there's more of an opportunity for me to get out, and I'm going to do my best to try and slap the ball in the opposite field.
How about as a hitter, when you see everybody with the shift, how about you take extra BP or extra work with the hitting coach and figure out a better technique to go to the opposite field?
One guy that I've seen that has done that, but he's doing it for an opposite reason of why is Brian McCann. Brian McCann lately is going the opposite way, just because he's trying to make sure he's not overdoing his legs, because he knows he's older and he's getting into August, it's hot. That's the reason he gave. But it just kind of learn into that and be able to do it.
Gonzo, it's no different in basketball. Over the years, Michael Jordan and LeBron James, they both, as they got older in their careers, started to develop a better shot, a better three-pointer. Michael was a 15 to 21-foot guy, and also, of course, you know, his monster game, taking the ball to the hole. LeBron, the same thing, but they both developed their outside shot more. Players over the years will say, you know, I didn't think I was as strong going to my left. Players were cheating me to the left. Well, then I started to learn how to go to my left, and I made it more difficult for guys. If a guy didn't have a good post-up move, he developed a post-up move. It's not really a difficult concept, I don't think, to work on an aspect of your game. These guys are the best baseball players in the world. They've got to be able to figure out a way to go the opposite way. And you know what? If you start beating the shift that way, they're not going to be shifting anymore.
Yeah, and it's just that. That's why I don't understand the hate on the shift. Is just learn how to beat it.
Yeah.
That's my aspect to it. And talking about the attendance factor, we're looking at it. The Dodgers are already over 3 million people.
Ridiculous every year
in attendance, which is it's crazy. Yeah, but I think what drives attendance in Major League Baseball down is the teams like Miami, Tampa Bay, Baltimore, who's terrible right now, Kansas City. When they're really, really bad, their fans do not go whatsoever.
I agree with you, and I'll tell you one more thing, Gonzo, that I think drives it down. Watch those games from Yankee Stadium, from Dodger Stadium, from a lot of the stadiums that have redone the seats in the 10 or 15 rows behind home plate. How often do you see those seats filled? A lot of times those seats are not getting bought, and a lot of these the fancier areas, I think baseball on a certain level is pricing themselves out. There's a lot of greedy owners, a lot of greedy organizations. They're making money at the turnstiles, with concessions, with merchandise sales, with parking. They are making money hand over fist. And listen, it's great. Everybody wants to make money. I get that. But a point has to come, much like, and I always go back to the restaurant business, much like when restaurants are buying the best cuts of meat that you aren't going to be able to get in a market for what amounts to pennies on the dollar. And then in a New York restaurant, you're seeing, or Chicago or San Francisco, you're seeing steaks for $40, $70, $90, $100. They don't need to be that much. They're playing to a certain crowd. They're trying to keep another crowd out. Baseball could also do something to help themselves by not pricing so many regular Joes and Marys out.
Yeah, I would definitely agree on that, and that goes into the factor of why I plan ahead for next year once the schedule release comes out. I see what games I want and can, and I can hit, or which games I'm not going to be able to hit because I just don't want to spend that money. One team that did surprise me on that list would be Colorado. They are in, I think, the top five. They are the fifth team in attendance in the league, which I'm like, well, they're not great. They're not bad. But to be top five is pretty awesome.
And you know what? For Colorado, it validates all the years they had minor league baseball in that city, and they always drew well, and they always made the case. You know, when they would have a special game there as well, a special exhibition game, they always made the case, groups over the years, that we can be a major league city, and they have definitely validated that.
But to get back to the point for me would be, I don't care for launch angle. I never look for it. I don't care about exit velocity. I don't look for it. It's a ball. It's a bat hitting a ball. That's what it is. That's why I like baseball, and I'm going to watch it because I want to see the pitcher duel. I want to see if the pitcher can get the batter. And to the point of them saying it's unwatchable, there's dirtier stuff now that the pitchers throw that just kind of gets you, man. Like a month ago, there on ESPN network, they showed a pitch from a Tampa Bay pitcher. I can't remember who it was. I think he threw a slider. It started at the inside of the batter's hands and ended completely outside, and the batter
That's
almost
filthy.
Fell. Yeah, and I'm like, how? I have 0.1 second to react to that, and how, like it just. I don't understand their aspect of I can't watch baseball.
No, I can't understand that as well. And you know what? We'll continue this. Tony D's coming up next. I've never known if Tony was more of a purist or more of what I call an evolvist, not an evangelist, an evolvist. We'll talk with Tony D up next. This is the CGP.
You're listening to the Christopher Gabriel Program on 940 ESPN and 940ESPNFresno.com. Christopher Gabriel returns.
Top of the hour, we'll talk with Cam Morrell on a Monday. You know what that means. Half hour before him, sometimes a little less, like today, because I babbled on first half hour. We talked to our very good friend, who you hear from 2 to 3 Monday through Thursday, 2 to 4 on Fridays, Mr. Tony Diodato. Tony, how are you?
I'm fine, CG. By the way, pass along to Cam my deep sympathies, not only an assistant coach, now a former teammate passing away at a terrible situation.
Terrible.
I know you guys will talk
we
about
are.
It top of the hour. CG, I want to very quickly, Maxon had emailed in about last hour under the header of, you never know where things are going to go. You and I know this from doing this over the years,
yep.
Right? Okay, You mentioned to me earlier in the day, we're going to do a noon show on Friday the 30th because of other programming, including your show 4 to 6 on Friday in the zone and all of that. And I mentioned on air to Paul Leppler that that's a redo of a noon show that we used to do on a regular basis a few years ago. And Andrew Martin and Jackson Moore were on with me, and I jokingly called it the Andrew Jackson Hour. And I mentioned to Paul, I said, but it was always an unimpeachable performance. And Maxson emails in and said, you're wrong because Andrew Jackson was impeached. Maxson, no, he wasn't. He was censured. He wasn't impeached. Andrew Johnson was impeached. That's why it was unimpeachable, because Andrew Jackson was not impeached. If he were, then it would not have been unimpeachable. There you go, CG. You never know where we're headed with this thing, do you?
Never, so, and you're right.
Thank you.
That's, boy, yes. I, you know, here I was going to break down the cost of lima beans, and, and you know, I'm not getting those emails from Max, so.
Well, I owe you 30 seconds now in day's future. Thank you for letting me.
Not a problem. And okay. And thank you to you. Because we have made a shift on Friday the 30th. I was asked would I do my program in Los Angeles. I'm thrilled. So we moved me to 4 to 6. We moved the zone 2 to 4, and you were gracious enough to move 12 to 2, and I thank you for that, and also the boys, Nick for being flexible, because I'm going to be down there. So everybody, team effort, really appreciate it.
And then, like I said, it's back to the future for me, because it's just a one and off, but we did it on a regular basis at noon several years ago. So look forward to it, CJ. It should be a great day and a great lead up to the 31st, that's for sure.
It will. And I want to change, you know, you and I have some things we're going to talk about, but I, as long as we're talking about that Friday, I want to share this with you, and I want to get your thoughts, because you wouldn't expect ESPN to do anything to the contrary of the Fresno State USC game, doing nothing but acting as though it will be the Cardinal in gold on the field, and there's going to be some other team out there. We don't know who they are, but they'll be out there as well. Case in point, and another example, just moments ago, when they showed USC's schedule, and they listed, according to the ESPN Power Index, USC is listed as an 86% chance to win, and they also mentioned that four of their first six games are against ranked opponents, Stanford, Utah, Washington, and Notre Dame. Not a single word of Fresno State. Nothing. And a couple of thoughts about this. Number one, the wanton disrespect for Group of Five teams that don't have the letters UCF are absolutely amazing to me. Listen, do you really think that 86% is a legit number? Because obviously, SC's favored. They're playing at home. They have more talent than Fresno State. But to me, 86%, not that that matters in the long run, but it seems like that's a pretty high number, Tony.
Yeah, CG, and as objective as I can be, I think if you were to look at this thing dispassionately, which means not for either side or not any preconceived notion
right
of USC
right.
or the Fresno State team of last year, because that
correct.
Could tilt you in the direction. What we're looking at is the unknown of 30 slots that had to be replaced, some of them starters, other depth. We know that for Fresno State. We also know SC thought they were going to get Ryan Gosling, Kingsbury, and it didn't happen,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
So they have that mandatory transition. They have the pressure on Daniels. They have the pressure definitely on Helton. You and I have talked about this. Standing by the Hollywood sign with a beacon ready for that night is Urban Meyer saying, I'm available. The bat signal will be up about 11 o'clock or so on Saturday night, the 31st, if SC loses that game. Through it, I would say the Trojans, 55% would be reasonable. I don't think anything beyond that. Should they be favored? Yes. But I think it's very marginal given the Bulldogs' ability under Tedford to play well week after week, including, by the way, in both Alabama and Washington, though the games were not terribly close, they were competitive. And that was a team that Teddy had just inherited. So 2 years at Tedford, third year underway. I think the Bulldogs, 55-45 at best, tilted toward USC right now.
Well, Tony, I think that's fair, and I guess that leads me to, you know, this has become flush the format with Tony Monday, because things have come up, and you know, this is what we do.
Better than the alternative, CJ.
No, well, that's very true.
That's, one never knows.
That's a very good point.
Thank you.
The The other thing, and I know that sometimes we sound like we're doing nothing but jumping all over UCF. We have gone out of our way to give UCF credit on this program, but also try to be measured and balanced, and that, you know, UCF, you still can't get around their schedule. A lot of the UCF fans say, well, what about Alabama? Don't compare yourselves to Alabama. Alabama plays in the SEC, and your American Conference, with all due respect, isn't close to the minefield that playing in the SEC is. But here's why I bring this up. You look at last year. Let's even take Fresno State out of the equation for a second. You have Boise State in the AP poll. Oh, they're not there. Then you go back to Fresno State. Well, they're not in the preseason AP poll either. Oh, but there's UCF. There they are at number 17. And you look a little bit at them, and they don't have a quarterback. They're trying to figure out who is going to lead them between Brandon Wimbush, Quadri Jones, and Dylan Gabriel. The guy, Daryl Mack Jr., he was one of the guys who they thought might be the guy. He's out for an extended period of time. That's number one. Number two, they're filling four new spots on the defensive line. And three, the offensive line, they're filling two new spots. And yet, Tony, they find themselves preseason ranked 17. Quite honestly, I don't get it.
Well, this is the issue, CG, that we have talked about, and I agree with you completely in your view of it. How much do you calculate where a team finished in regard to where they're going to start the next year, vis-a-vis, have you looked at the roster to address those issues, or as we have surmised, and I don't think we're wrong about this, outside of the top 10, not a lot of time is spent in analysis about who or how many quality players a team in the end, say the 20 to 25 range or 15 to 25, how many they've lost, how much is just automatically, it's worried about the top 10, the rest of them, how did they finish last year, let's line them up and stick them in the hierarchy again. And I do think that's a problem.
Yeah, and I mean, as you're mentioning this, I took a peek, and they have in the AP poll, which I don't know anybody, Tony, who pays much attention to the coaches poll. I mean, it just for a number of different reasons.
The grad assistants that fill it out every week.
That's about it.
Yes.
But okay. They have Boise State with with others receiving votes at 33, Fresno State at 38. And, you know, you have the teams. If let's just look at the bottom five of the AP poll right now. And, you know, Tony, this is why the preseason poll, it's never going away. I understand that. We both understand why it's out there. It's for selling magazines, and it's for selling conversations, and it's for arguing. But you look at the bottom five teams there, and 21 through 25, and in order, it's Iowa State, Syracuse, Washington State, Nebraska, Stanford. And I would argue that just because the name on your jersey or on your helmets or, you know, the team that you play for is a big P5 school name, and we all know those names, that doesn't immediately qualify you to be in the top 25. And this is where the argument comes in. You know, Stanford didn't exactly show themselves to be earth-shaking last year. Certainly Nebraska didn't. You can talk about some decent wins from both Washington State. Syracuse played Clemson brilliantly in South Carolina before they gave up a two-touchdown lead, and Iowa State certainly had a couple of good wins. But I would argue it's the Scott Frost media machine, and it's Stanford because, well, gosh darn it, we got to get somebody else besides Oregon in there, so let's throw them in there. And Washington.
Well, look, first of all, when you talk about the rankings, particularly up front, you're right. It is, you know, number one, so-and-so, and number four, Saturday on ABC. That kind of stuff is always going to be there because the hype machine has to be there for those mega bucks that those sponsors have paid, right? They want the promo to run, and they want the number attached to it. What you're bringing up was what you and I talked about a few weeks ago, CG, and that is for a Fresno State, for instance, it is not inconsequential to end up at 38, if you want to extrapolate it out, instead of in the top 25, because then your climb is so long and so arduous throughout an all-too-short season in the number of games to get yourself up to a legitimate position. You have to climb over people by attrition or by deed which you wouldn't have to if they would put you where they're putting other people automatically. I guess what I'm saying is, if we're going to throw somebody in by rote because of where they ended up last year, then let's do the same with Fresno State, okay? Don't knock them down to 38 when they're in the top 25. Why scrutiny for Fresno State or disrespect when somebody else is ceded their position once again? That's what the inconsistency is, what bothers me. You want to microanalyze, CG, let's do it for the top 50 teams in the country legitimately, not just the ones you want to pay attention to and the ones you want to ignore.
No, that's exactly right. Jeremy sent us a tweet at CG Program. Jeremy saying, I think UCF is also partially benefiting from their geography. Okay, that's true, but my argument to that is the parameters that are in place here that work against Mountain West teams, they move the goalposts, Tony, for UCF, and it's less to do with, in this case, it's less to do with the geography and more to do with the fact that it's a team that has been, you know, 24, 25 wins or whatever it is, and one loss over the last 2 years. They become a flavor of the month, and when you look at the depth of their team, I'm not saying they haven't had good teams, but you know what? The last couple of years, I would be more than happy to see UCF against Fresno State or Boise State, or for that matter, throw them up against Utah State as well. I think if you're going to set the rules for one set of teams in a conference, then those rules that are in play need to be for them as well.
Well, you're right, particularly when Memphis should have beaten them the last two times they played. That's all there is to it, all right? Memphis had more to do with their own fate than
right.
UCF did. And I'm with you. I give UCF due credit. But I'll tell you this, as opposed to Boise State, and this is difficult for a lot of Fresno State fans to accept, the year-after-year excellence of Boise State from the midway point of that first decade, you know, 01, particularly 05 on, right, and then 06 in the bowl game, I see why they were getting the benefit of the doubt. Year after year, they were there consistently with 10 wins plus. UCF, as you pointed out, Christopher, and it's fair to say this, they were awful just a few years ago. They've been terrific the last few years, but the legacy is not there. There is not 15 years of excellence there. Go back 4 years and tell me what UCF was doing. It was a great turnaround under Frost, who's now gone, but I don't see the history that gives them the benefit of the doubt. There's something about the team and the fact that they score a whole bunch of points, and they do play in the right time zone and the right state. That probably makes them a cause celeb more than they deserve at the moment.
Well, there's no doubt about it. There's absolutely no doubt about it. And I didn't want us to get hung up on that, but I you know, once we got down that road, I really wanted to flesh this out a little bit with you, because UCF has been a cause celeb, and I think, you know, as I said, I do think UCF is partially, and he used, to be fair, Jeremy used the word partially benefiting, and he's right. They sure are partially benefiting, but I think that a lot of the experts have gone giddy over this program, and that's fine if you want to do that, but the reasons they're going giddy over them, some of these folks should pay more attention to guys like Kirk Herbstreit when he is going on and on ad nauseum in a good way for folks out here over the quality of opponents and of the style of play that you see at a Fresno State, that you see at a Boise State, that you saw last year with Utah State, and that most years you see from San Diego State. And that's where I agree with Jeremy that there is a less of an ability to watch games or a desire to watch games because they're so late on the East Coast. But the lateness of the games for people on the East Coast, for voters east of the Mississippi, is not a valid reason to disqualify them or to discredit the ability of these teams, the talent that there's on these teams, and the coaching that these teams have.
Yeah, and let's face it, a 62-56 game is a lot more fun for the pundits, particularly earlier in the evening, than a 20-17 game, which is what you see when Fresno State and San Diego State play, or Utah State or Boise State, right? Just look at the title game that Fresno State and Boise State played. That was a figurative fist fight out there to get points, CG, independent
right.
of the snow. Okay, it was not going to be first one to 50. That's what happens throughout the American Conference, and it makes it fun to watch. I love watching it, but I also know that a good defense like Fresno State had last year and will have this year in a ground game would mop the floor with the UCF
right.
team, because they couldn't
right.
stop Fresno State and get the ball back enough to put up points. And but you know what? Maybe that's my bias.
And
okay.
Tony, we're out of time. We will talk later this week, Wednesday, Friday.
Wednesday.
We'll figure it
finally,
out.
Finally. And again, my sympathies to Cam.
Absolutely.
Please pass it along.
All right.
Take care, guys.
Thank you, Tony. This is the CGP.
You're listening to the Christopher Gabriel Program on 940 ESPN. Auto Parts.
Coming up in hour number two, we'll start it off with Cam Morrell. We'll be talking about Antonio Bryant. We'll talk about Cedric Benson and a whole bunch of other things. Glad you're hanging out with us. This is the CGP.
More of the Christopher Gabriel Program right now on 940 ESPN.
Ooh, child, things are gonna get easier.
Coming up top of the hour, top five at 5. At 5:23, 24, give or take a minute or two, we'll tell you about the University of Louisiana coach that has this idea for what he'd like his players to do, and I find it baffling. To the point of, I think, just it's absurd. And then at 5:35, we will talk with Coach Z. I've had him on before, Brian Zwoshka, the Fresno State women's soccer coach. And with a little luck, I will say Brian's name once, and then it will be Coach Z the rest of the time, because they've got a big match coming up this week. They had a couple of exhibition matches so far going into this season, and then. They're going to be playing Oregon. That's going to be on the 22nd, and I believe that's Thursday. It's going to be a 7 p.m. start time, and we'll see how this team looks for this year. We'll get Coach Z, get his thoughts on it. All right, so we've only got a couple of minutes to go this hour, Gonzo. Paul Ladwig talking about his happy place is Pebble Beach. I would easily say that mine is, whether it's, you know, you can spin the wheel, and if it lands on Carmel or Pacific Grove or Monterey, I'm happy staying in either place, either of those three places. I could live there tomorrow. Where is the Gonzo happy place?
I we're talking city. We're talking
whatever.
A park.
Whatever. Well, it could be your kitchen. You know, a kitchen is a happy place for me. But in terms of somewhere that you go for a couple of days that you need to kind of rest. Recharge and get ready for the following week.
Something that always recharges me and gets me going and actually gets me relaxed would be my grandparents' backyard.
Nice.
Yeah,
going
there on the weekend, barbecuing with the family, that relaxes me and recharges me.
I think that's an awesome place. I think that's I think about my family growing up and it always. You know, obviously you never have any say in this, but I three of my four grandparents I lost when I was very, very young. But one I had through my adulthood, but I'm guessing very close with the family.
Yes, very close. And as you know, my grandpa passed away not too long ago. But we one thing that he did mention before passing is that he wants his family to stay as close as possible, just like when he was alive.
Yeah, and I think that's great. I think about... as long as we're talking about this for a moment, I think about my grandfather on my dad's side. He came through Ellis Island. He was a math professor at the University of Chicago. The Depression hit. Him and his brother opened a diner across from DePaul on Seminary Avenue. It was called The Seminary. It was there for 40 years. Very, very famous place. But he taught me things when I was 7 years old that I remember to this day, that I carry with me to this day, in terms of treating people, how you treat people, how you go about your business. I think about, it would have been great to have him longer, but I had him long enough. to learn.
Yeah, and something that I learned the most from my grandfather was, and I want to say a man's word, but it's not. He did it to my sister and my cousins as well, is that your word is your utmost. That's what people will remember you for. So that's what I carry on very
No,
heavily.
I'm with you. And you know, Tony Montana and Scarface had a line about that. Unfortunately, I can't really say it on here, but it has to do with not breaking your word for anybody. We'll just leave it right there. Coming up, hour number three, and that means top five at five. We'll tell you a little bit about this Louisiana coach that just kind of defies logic. And then Coach Z, Fresno State women's soccer looking for a big season. They're not picked very high, but we'll see what that means as things unfold beginning on Thursday when the real season gets going. This is the CGP.
Your home of the Los Angeles Lakers, 940 ESPN, the Valley's local sports leader, KFIV Fresno. The Top 5 at 5 is sponsored by the Law Office of Josh Lazar and Associates. And now, from Fresno, California, to the furthest reaches of the galaxy, here are your Top 5 at 5 sports talkers of the day.
Top 5 at 5 for a Monday afternoon here in the beautiful Central Valley of California. And temperature's not too bad today. Feels comfortable. It's been worse. It will be worse later in the week. Be much worse.
Yes.
I'll be whining. That's just what I do. I'm not a whiner by nature, but when it comes to weather, I'm a big baby. You know?
I can get that way too.
You know, I mean, it is what it is. I know who I am. And I have learned to, as I said, not acclimate, but I've learned to tolerate.
And especially this weekend, like you said, it's going to get really hot. And if you expect to go out to the Greek festival,
oh yes, well you know, and I'll be there. You know, and you get hot, and then you're going eating hot food, and then you're going out and you're doing some Greek dancing. You know, which I've done, which my younger daughter was stunned that I knew how to do that. But you know, Kobe's going to be here. Kobe's son's going to be here too, so that's going
to
be fun.
Actually, Ashley asked me to ask you to show me how to dance like that.
I can teach you both. Yeah, there's a very basic dance. It's, you know, you're all kind of holding hands up in the air, and it's a lot of movement to the right, to the left, and a lot of, you know, you don't want to trip over yourself, but it's a fun dance, and the music is great. Top 5 at 5 will not include anything having to do with Greek dancing today, but we could do that. You know, top 5 Greek dancing moments in your life. But five stories that we think you'll find interesting. You probably know a couple of these. This first one that we're going to get to was a total mystery to me.
Number one.
I had no idea until you put this in front of me earlier today that the Chicago Bears and Cleveland Browns are getting a lot of action in Las Vegas. There are more bets on the Bears to win the Super Bowl than there are on any other team at multiple sports books, and the Browns are right behind the Bears. Alan Berg is the senior odds maker for Caesars, and he said this: it's been kind of overwhelming, the support for the Bears. Every time the Bears go to the playoffs the following year, the money just pours in. Everybody gets optimistic. All right, I'm just going to tell you, I've done this before, and I'm going to give you the Chicago Bear sports fan. This is it. Saturday Night Live had it right years ago. This is basically it. Yeah, how you doing, Gonzo? The Chicago Bears, you know, they're probably going to go 13-3, maybe 14-2. They're going to sweep their way to the Super Bowl. Mark it down. First preseason loss. This team sucks. I'm burning my jersey. I'm burning my hat. They can all go to hell. That's the Chicago Bears fan. I just tell it. That's a Bears fan right there.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, there's really big optimism in that situation. Not only that, but what is it when you bet? You bet for odds. You bet for what you think can actually happen.
That's right.
But it's going to give you the most return as well. The Bears winning the Super Bowl isn't too out there. I don't have them as a pick to win the Super Bowl, but I can see why people would pick them.
I don't have them either as a pick to win the Super Bowl. I'm not a bettor per se, but they wouldn't be who I put my money on. But it does, it shows the mentality of Chicago fans in that. And listen, I say this as a proud, born and raised Chicagoan, but you give Chicago Bears, well, I see I said it wrong. You give Chicago Bears fans even the slightest bit of hope that, you know, that Mitchell Trubisky, you know, he's getting a little better, and the Bears have more offensive weapons, and Matt Nagy's doing a good job. And, you know, we got a kicker now, Pinero, and the guy's probably going to go, you know, he's probably not going to miss a field goal or extra point all year. And they're betting on that four-letter word that begins with H, hope. That's what their Chicagoans are betting on. They are betting on hope, Gonzo.
And I guess you should have hope when your team had a really, really, really good chance to get past in the playoffs and maybe get to the Super Bowl, but a fingertip and a kicker away from getting there.
You know our good friend and colleague back here, Luis.
Yeah?
He's a diehard Rams fan. Diehard.
I know that.
Yeah, now you know. And Luis is a classy man because I came in and he saw the look on my face because I saw him. This was after the Bears lost to the Eagles. He saw the look on my face, and he stopped by my desk and just kind of went, "I'm sorry," and kept moving. And it was the perfect reaction because I was. Let's just say that just for that moment, I was in no mood because we were going to go down to the LA. We were going to go down to the Coliseum. We were going to go down to the game together, and go see the Rams and the Bears. Instead, it was ultimately the Rams and the Cowboys. But Bears and Browns, one thing I'll say is I love the fact that the Browns have shed the whole, we can't win a game, we're a joke. If OBJ has the kind of year that he's capable of, if Jarvis Landry has the kind of year that he's capable of, if Baker Mayfield doesn't have a sophomore jinx, if the defense comes through, they're going to be a fun team to watch, and so will the Bears. For the Browns, I think the Browns, a playoff is entirely possible. I don't know if they win the division, but I think they make the playoffs. The Bears, certainly the division is absolutely theirs for the taking because it's not going to be the Lions. It's not going to be the Packers. I'm not sold on the Vikings behind Kirk Cousins.
Yeah, it just when you look at it, I have the Bears Vikings fighting it off for my liking in the division, and I have the Ravens Browns fighting it out
Absolutely.
As well for the division. So they're going to be competitive. There's no doubt about it. And you know, once you get in the playoffs, anything can happen.
Well, next week begins. We think Tony Landry coming on to do Friday picks. But you and I, the week after next, will pick our NFL divisions, wild card, we'll pick it right through.
I have a couple of surprises, probably.
I can't wait.
Number two.
Well, we'll just stay with the National Football League. New York Jets fans, I love the Jets fan base. I do. They're a little different than the Bears fan base, but they both are a little delusional at times. Le'Veon Bell not going to play a game for the Jets until the start of the regular season. This is confirmed from Adam Gase, head coach. And the New Yorker Jets fans are saying, well, of course. You know, of course he's not going to play. Before, I don't know how you miss a whole year and then that makes sense, not even giving him some snaps. And one of the arguments that was made, interesting piece that I read, and you put this one in front of me too, from Rob Goldberg, Bleacher Report, and Rob makes a point that, well, listen, Bell sat out the entire preseason of 2017, and he was named a first-team All-Pro that year. That's right, but he didn't miss the 2016 season. There's a difference here. He didn't play last year. I would think you'd want to. Yeah, he's getting reps in practice. Yeah, he's going through all the motions. But I would think you'd want to at least put him in a couple of series. You know, if they're worried about injury, then why don't you just put some bubble wrap around him and just, you know, let him play that way? Because you can get injured getting out of a golf cart, getting to the practice field in camp.
Yeah, exactly. You can get hurt at camp. We've seen it various time and time again, where it's just simple. I remember Crabtree when he was with the San Francisco 49ers, where he's just doing a sprinting drill, and he goes down with his Achilles tear. And so if that's what you're scared of, then don't let him play football. I don't understand that. But the guy, first game of the regular season, he's not going to look like Le'Veon Bell. Maybe not even the second or third or even the fourth. Over a year and almost 2 years since he touched a football.
No, I completely agree. Well, you might as well stay with the NFL here.
Number three.
So NFL and NFL Players Association saying that they are open to expanding the playoffs from 12 teams to 14 in their new collective bargaining agreement talks, their new CBA talks. This coming to us from Tom Pelissero, good Minnesota guy, and Ian Rappaport, saying that both sides considering the change, but here's why. They want to offset the loss of revenue that's going to be caused by reducing preseason to 3 games. Every time I hear of the National Football League, whether it's owners, whether it's Roger Goodell and the folks that work with him, anybody talking about the concern of lost revenue, it's like a film actor that is used to making $25 million a picture, and suddenly he discovers he's only going to make $18 million on his next picture. So, okay, you're not making as much, but you're not losing money per se. You are still ahead of the game. And in the National Football League, I get the fact that the players are opposed to expanding the regular season. As a fan, I'm opposed to it. I'm opposed to the entire preseason, for that matter. But I have a hard time digesting when these multimillionaire and billionaire owners and the billionaire league talks about their concerns over losing money. Nobody's losing anything.
Did you explain the... I just want to make sure you haven't explained the way the format they want to take it.
Oh, no. Go ahead and explain that.
Yeah, so the way they want to do it is in the wild card round, the number one seed will be the only seed now to have a bye.
Right.
So two would play seven, three would play six, four would play five. And then you go to the divisional round, the number one seed plays the lowest seed that advances, and then the other game would be between the other two teams that aren't the lowest seed.
And the first thing that jumped out at me when I saw that was the number one team gets the bye. How many years have we seen that there's been a couple of teams tied with 12-4 records, 13-3 records? And so invariably, it's going to be a tiebreaker that gives one team the bye, and one team is playing in that first week, and there's going to be some sort of public relations price to pay for the team that comes out and says, we earned the right. This system has to be changed.
Yeah, I think it's going to pass just for the sense of not only
sure.
Do the teams, not only would the teams itself, like the GMs, not want this to pass because you are giving up one extra seed of bye. Where we've seen that more times than not, the number one or two seeds are the ones that are getting to the Super Bowl because they are the most rested team. And I would say this, I think even the players wouldn't want to give that up because they know if we're good enough, we don't have to play the first week of the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, it's a little bit like the shell game on street corners in New York where, all right, so we're going to cut back our preseason games. We're going to add a game here. No, we're not going to add the regular season. We're going to add in the playoffs. And ultimately, what this all centers on is wanting to make sure that one way or another, either pay us early or pay us late, there's going to be more revenue coming in, or at least there's going to be the same amount of revenue. Maybe I'm just too cynical, but the greed factor here is off the charts.
Number four.
Well, let's see. Let's go to this one. I found this interesting. Vince Carter coming back for his 22nd NBA season playing for the Atlanta Hawks. And a former player, all-star as well, Gilbert Arenas, coming out a few months ago, not happy about Mr. Carter playing, Arena said this. I was talking to Chris Kirshner on The Athletic. He said, let's be honest here. You have Vince or you have this young guy. You're going to choose Vince. He's put 20 years in. His 5% is better than your 100% because his 5% is going to be smart basketball, so the coach is going to overlook young talent until they get that experience. When you're the last guy on the bench or the guy who got cut, you look to someone like Vince and say, come on, dude. There's no upside for Vince. Let somebody else get in there and be the next Vince Carter. And Arenas is in the whole three-on-three basketball league. He's the captain of one of the teams, the enemies. And he is making the charge or making the case for some of the big three players who are essentially the classic journeyman players that aren't getting a shot at the NBA because of a player like a Vince Carter. And I would say this. Gilbert Arenas sounds a little bit bitter to me. Sounds like he's upset that he's not the guy on the bench. Because if a team came to Gilbert Arenas right now and said, we'd like to sign you to a minimum contract, Gilbert Arenas isn't going to be worried about those guys in the 3-on-3. Gilbert Arenas is going to be signing that contract. If an NBA team that has 12 roster spots, a 13th that has a non-active role, if an NBA team has decided Vince Carter is worth it for the production that we're going to get, he averaged just over 7 last year and a couple of assists and a couple of rebounds. If they believe Vince Carter is worth it to have on the floor, to have on the bench, to have in the locker room, and to have as somebody who is mentoring young players, who is Gilbert Arenas to say that the Hawks have no business having him on their team or that Vince Carter should willingly give up his spot? I think that's nonsense.
Because of the fact that we know like in Dallas, if you see Luka Doncic over there, how much information he was able to get now prior to Dirk retiring. In Miami, all those young guys were able to get from Dwayne Wade. I'm sure Trae Young probably went to the front office and said, come on, please give me a little bit, like one more year with Vince if he wants to play. He probably brought so much information for the kid. This whole thought process of a guy getting cut going, come on, man. No, be better. Like, what can I say? If Vince Carter knowledge and game is still better than you at the age he is, how about you self-reflect?
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more.
Number 5.
Yeah, we talked about this a little bit earlier in the program. The first Associated Press preseason top 25 is out. As you would expect, Clemson on top at number 1, Alabama number 2. Rounding out your top 5, Georgia, Oklahoma, Ohio State, LSU. You can argue about 3 through, I'll give you the top 6. I'll give you the top 10. LSU 6, and then Michigan, Florida, Notre Dame, Texas. You can argue about the top 9 and reorder numbers 3 through 9. There's 3 teams in this top 25 that I have an issue with. Number 10, Texas, coming in at 10-4 last year. I'm not sure why they're there other than writers, media members who are, you know, Associated Press writers who are more hopeful that, you know, that the Longhorns are going to find their way back into being a major player. How they give them number 10. Number 17, we've already talked about UCF. They are replacing 4 of their defensive starters on the front line, the front 7. They're replacing 2 offensive linemen. They have got a total kerfuffle, a lot of talent, but largely unproven at quarterback. And somehow, 12-1 UCF from last year, losers in the Fiesta Bowl, played a great game without Mackenzie Milton, played a great game against LSU. They come in at number 17, 12-2 Fresno State, nowhere to be found. Boise State, I think they were, 11-3? I'm not sure where they
were. Something like that.
But nowhere to find them. This is the other team that I have a problem with, Nebraska. Nebraska was 4-8 last year, but I guess we're going on the idea, and listen, we're happy. We're going to be talking with Erin Sorensen, who covers the Big Ten, and she's based in Omaha. She works for the Varsity. She covers Nebraska. She just spent a whole day following Adrian Martinez around. We're going to have Erin on in the next week or so. But how they arrive at a 4-8 Nebraska team from last year putting them at number 24 seems to be much more let's hope the Big Red is back versus anything that justifies them being there.
Honestly, a lot of the picks in this situation makes you think that exact thing. It's just them hoping the fact that these teams stay good or even resemble a team that is good enough. Because if you look at all the teams that receive votes, you have USC that received one vote. You have Fresno State who received 8. Boise State received 38. So looking at that, you go, but if we look actually in the top 25, is Stanford really a top 25 team? Other than Washington and Oregon, is Utah also involved in the top 15 where you actually think Utah is a top 15 college football program right now that can go in and beat other teams like that?
Yeah, I just – this is – every year I get nuts with the preseason AP poll. And listen, I know about a half dozen of the AP voters – And they're high quality people, and there's others that I watch their I am meticulous to this. I watch these guys ballots all year long to see who's voting whom in, and we've exposed a couple of the writers over the last couple of years on this program to the point where we contacted them and tried to get them to come on the program to explain how, for example, how they still two different writers had San Diego State above Fresno State in the year that Fresno State went down there and beat them 27-3. I wasn't going to bring them on here to rake them over the coals. I just wanted to ask them, how did that happen? One of them, we found out, went to sleep before the game even started, but voted San Diego State, assuming they were going to win. That's how he voted. how does that happen?
Yeah, honestly, and again, with you and the conversation you and Cam had, also with Tony D, were the fact that you want to see Texas, Notre Dame, or when all these teams face each other, when they want to have a 8-10, and specifically in these situations where they play each other kind of early, Texas, Oklahoma, something like that, you want it to be eye popping for the fans.
And just to show you how ridiculous a lot of this stuff is, you look at Fresno State and USC, and again, for what it's worth, the AP voters have Boise State with 38 votes, USC getting 1, but the ESPN Power Index has USC at an 86% chance of beating Fresno State. So somebody knows something, or somebody really is missing something somewhere in there. Top 5 at 5.
You're listening to the Christopher Gabriel Program on 940 ESPN and 940ESPNFresno.com. More of the Christopher Gabriel Program right now on 940 ESPN.
Coming up in a couple of minutes, we'll talk with Ryan Zwoschka. He is the head coach, Fresno State Women's Soccer, opening up against Oregon a little bit later this week. But before that, we've got to tell you about Billy Napier. Billy Napier is the head coach of the University of Louisiana. Not LSU, University of Louisiana. And apparently, for the Ragin' Cajun football team, they have the Ragin' Cajun Athletic Foundation. You know, every school has an aptly named athletic foundation. Donations come in. Large donations, small donations. It goes to stadium improvements. Maybe it goes to a particular academic field. Maybe it goes to helping a building get built and so on. Billy Napier is pushing his scholarship players to give back to the school. Nothing wrong with that. But think about college football players for a moment, college basketball players. We hear forever that most of them, I'm talking about football and basketball now. We'll keep it to football. Most of them don't have a whole lot of money. And it's one of the reasons why the whole issue of paying players, being able to make money off their likeness, being able to have companies use their likeness and so on and pay them directly. It's why the bill passed through the Senate here and now is going through the Assembly and so on. Well, Billy Napier wants his players to become donors. He's encouraged them to donate for a minimum of $50 per player. And he also made the stipulation it's optional. It's optional for walk-on players to be involved. This is what he said. He said, it's all about gratitude. That's probably a little bit unheard of and a little bit unique. But I think this is a place where that would be appreciated. I think it's part of the type of program that we want to have. We want our players to be educated and understand the benefits that come with being a student athlete. And that is not something that should be taken lightly, the effort and time and investment that the people that support athletes at UL have put into the program. Now, bear in mind, folks, that he's asking players to make donations. Again, despite the fact that these are young men who are not paid for any revenue that they're helping to generate for the NCAA as a whole, as well as the University of Louisiana. And he went on to say, we're trying to create a scenario where 5 or 10 years from now, these are guys who will give back and continue to be part of the program and realize what this place did for them. I would argue this. When you go to a school, ask Cam Morrell, he didn't need to be told to give back. I went to USC with Ronnie Lott and Anthony Munoz. They didn't need to be told to give back. I would argue that Jim Harbaugh, names that are coming to mind, didn't need to be told to give back to Michigan. Plenty of other people, players who were little-known players, maybe players you never heard of, generally don't need to be told or taught how to give back. But to ask players who are, by and large, at the FBS level, by and large, strapped for money, that you're asking them while they're there to donate $50 to your athletic scholarship fund seems utterly absurd to me. Am I way off base here, Gonzo? Do you see this differently?
I do not see this differently, and it amazes me the fact that this coach, it's put in quotation marks, right? Encouraged.
Yeah.
They're encouraged to donate a minimum of $50. How about instead of doing that, you don't take the millions of dollars you're taking as a head coach and you give back to the school that's giving you the job? Like, if you're trying to put it on the players to say, hey, well, you're getting an education off this, so how about you donate a little bit to the school? Well, you're getting paid heavy bucks, you probably, to coach that team. So how about you match what your players give or more?
If I'm a father of someone and I'm saying, you know what, I raised my kid to be very mindful of the opportunities that he has been given and to be respectful of everybody and to give back to the community in ways that he can volunteer his time, go to children's hospitals, go to schools, talk with kids, run clinics for kids that are free, all kinds of things that are within reasonable boundaries while you're a student at such and such university. And then there is this implied understanding that once you leave, you're going to give back to your university, especially as an athlete, because you had a scholarship and you had your tuition and your books and everything paid for. I just think it's excessive of him. And if I don't know what Billy Napier is making at the University of Louisiana, but you know what? If he's making $1 million a year, why don't you cover the $50 donation for your 70 players? Why don't you go ahead and throw in $100,000? Let's just call it a day.
Yeah, honestly, it just and what surprises me is everything that the athletic the Department of Athletics is saying coming out as well, just kind of saying the Louisiana Raging Cajuns Department of Athletics is thrilled that head coach Billy Napier's football program and his student athletes expressed their collective desire to give back and show gratitude to the Raging Cajuns Athletic Foundation.
All I know is that when you're in a team environment, you've been on teams, and especially when you're in a college team environment, boy, there's a lot of pressure when you're head coach and you're on a scholarship. You're in that meeting room. You're in that film room, that little, you know, 200-seat auditorium or 100-seat auditorium, and you're being, quote, encouraged. The pressure that is being put on you is more than encouraged. It's more like the word should be expected. That's what it seems like to me.
That's exactly what it seems like, and probably what it is. So I did find details on his contract. So in the first year of his contract, he made $756,000 guaranteed.
Good money still.
Yeah, and after that, he is making a base salary all aside from bonuses, of $250,000. So he is supposed to make over $2 million on his contract that he signed with this university.
Yeah, I think Coach Napier can find it in his heart to put up that donation. And you know what? How about tasking your players with something else that gives back to the university or gives back to the Ragin' Cajun community in a way other than, you know, there's players on this team that are like, man, I'd like to have $20 to go on a date this weekend, and I don't have, you know, this Friday night or, you know, outside of football season, and I've not got that.
And honestly, how many of us have actually thought of if I could have $50 more? Like that for these players, sometimes their families don't have enough money to send them money. They don't. So these players have to do something, which is either work inside the school or get a part-time job just so they can have some extra cash. And you're saying, we want you to please donate now.
We want to encourage you. But, and by the way, walk-on players, you don't have to worry about it. Walk-on players, don't worry about it. Scholarship guys, really want to think about giving up that 50.
Mm-hmm.
My goodness. Coming up, we're going to talk with Coach Z, Brian Zwaska. He is the head coach of Fresno State Women's Soccer. Big season is beginning this coming Thursday. We'll get his thoughts next. This is the CGP.
You're listening to the Christopher Gabriel Program on 940 ESPN. Christopher Gabriel returns.
Email from Dave. Heard you mentioning being at Fresno State Bulldog Stadium last night. We also came to the stadium to watch our son practice with the marching band. Field just pops now with the new lighting. Small steps toward improving the facility. Agreed. Band's coming along too. He said, you're Fresno State and UCF fan. Dave had kids that went to both schools. Dave, thank you for the email. CGP at 940ESPNFresno.com. And we are delighted to have a Fresno State UCF combo platter dad in the audience. We are good with that. Well, I'll tell you what. We had Coach Z on last year, Brian Zwaska. I hope I'm getting the name right, but he is the head man for women's soccer at Fresno State. Coach Z joins us right now. How much did I mess the name up, Coach?
Actually, you got it perfect when you said Coach Z, so.
Well, you know, but when I was born, I'm Greek, and our family's name was Gabrielitis, and my father said he just, you know, we're all proud to be Greek, 100%, but he got tired of people messing up the names. He got rid of the Edes and kept it at Gabriel. So you have a tough name, but you have a unique name and one that no one forgets.
That's right.
Let's take a look at this team. Last year, overall, 6-10-4, but in the conference, 5-3-3. Did the disparity between the two records, in terms of non-conference games, which pushed you down a little bit, did it come from the level of competition, or just was it something else?
I think it was definitely about newness in the team in terms of experience. You know, we lost a very experienced senior class, so we knew that last year was going to be a rebuilding year. We knew we had the talent, but obviously the match experience, you know, has a role to play in getting results. And it really took us, you know, a lot of experimenting and some partnership changes, you know, in the non-conference play to really get it clicking. And we were really pleased that we managed it come conference time.
How much stock do you put into, I think I know what you're going to say, but I have to ask anyway. You see the predicted order of finish, and I see that Fresno State is sitting at seventh with ahead of them Boise, San Jose, New Mexico, San Diego State, UNLV, Wyoming. Is that something that you just dismiss out of hand, or is it something that you just throw into the Coach Z basket of motivating tools?
Yeah, I mean, I think it comes in handy that way. You know, I will always respect, you know, the opinions of our peers, but I don't put too much stock into it. I mean, it's preseason. We don't know how everybody's recruiting classes are going to shake out. We believe that we've got an excellent recruiting class. So, you know, but nobody's gotten to see or judge, you know, what they're capable of yet. And So it is what it is. Of course, we'll use it to motivate the players and remind them that this is where they were judged to finish, and we're going to surpass it.
Coach Z, Fresno State women's soccer. You know, when you look at last year, and you look simply at the conference standings and how everyone did with Boise and Wyoming and New Mexico all at 7-2-2, you're right there at 5-3-3. It's not like there's a big gap between you and them, Coach.
No, and upon closer look, you know, you'll see the results are quite tight as well. You know, I mean, I feel like most of the games were within a goal of each other, and you know, and even amongst the top teams, you know, people exchange results as well. And you know, at the time, one of our faves to remember is that Boise was undefeated when we went there, and we had never beaten them at Boise. So we picked them off as the top team, and that's actually what helped the other teams find their window and catch up in terms of tying for the championship in the end. But yeah, there's a lot of exchanges like that, and the parity certainly in the top half is quite tight.
No, there's no question about it. You're talking about, of course, the October 19th match. You win 2-1. You also had a 0-0 draw with Wyoming a week earlier or so, and you look at the scores. I've got them all in front of me from last year, and I was looking at them a little bit earlier. And, I mean the games that you played, I mean, the matches that you played, you're right there. I mean, you were right there all season long, so it just seems like it reminds me a little bit of the Fresno FC Foxes that – they left a lot of points on the board last year, and this year they're finding they've taken another step, and they're getting those points in the way of wins. And now, you know, we'll see if your program can take another step. You have Oregon this week. You've had a couple of exhibitions. You beat Cal Poly 2-0. You beat Sacramento State 2-1. Oregon comes in on Thursday. Before we get to the Oregon side of it, let's talk about your roster. Who are we watching for in terms of players that really need to step up to take your program, to take this year's team to another level?
Well, you know, we're always looking for everybody across the board, as you can imagine, to contribute what they can. But we definitely have, you know, a large and impactful senior class. And, you know, we're looking at we need to establish, you know, not necessarily a single goal scorer, but we need to establish a couple of people that we can definitely rely on to put the ball in the net. And, you know, sometimes that, of course, is going to happen by committee. And that was probably more the case last year. This year we want the by committee part, but we're hoping that, you know, players like Melissa Ellis and Emma Chivers, you know, can get us on the board more consistently. And Ellie Avery is, you know, a very dynamic player that may not score a lot of goals, but she's certainly going to cause havoc and help us set up a lot of goals. And so the combination of by committee and hoping that, you know, one of these seniors really steps up and can bag some goals for us is really important.
And by my count, and correct me if I'm wrong, you have 9 seniors on this year's squad. Is that correct?
Yeah, but we have a redshirt junior as well that may be in their last season. So technically we probably have 10.
So then what I'm getting at is to kind of follow along with what you're saying, there's a lot of advantages this year with that many seniors, certainly in terms of leadership experience and being able to mentor younger players. It'll be, you know, there's going to be a challenge next year in terms of recruiting and filling a lot of those spots. But this year, I mean, what is the expectation for the ones not necessarily on the field, but the one on the pitch, but the ones who are not going to see as much action? What are you expecting from them?
Well, it's about learning and contributing however they can, because, you know, our starters that we might be hanging our hat on, you know, come conference time, they still need to be challenged every day, and we need to make sure that the level of training and the intensity in the training, you know, is developing everybody. So obviously those that are on the bench that might be trying to catch up or get minutes, you know, they're going to be challenged every day, but we need them to push the ones that we're hanging our hats on as well. And everybody understands that, and the spirit in the team, you know, is quite good. And I think that that's what guided us last year in terms of us turning around from the first half of the season.
You have a nice, we're talking with Coach Z, head coach of Fresno State Women's Soccer. They open up this Thursday against Oregon, 7 p.m. Soccer and Lacrosse Stadium. You actually have three games in a row there. You're playing Oregon, Pacific, and then Bakersfield. Let's talk about Oregon out of the Pac-12. What do they present that jumps out immediately to you as something that will be a hurdle?
Well, you know, in terms of their overall conference, you know, it's a very athletic and dynamic conference, and those are the types of players that they need to be equipped with, you know, to compete in their conference. So we're certainly expecting a level of athleticism that will already be challenging out of the gate. We're expecting, you know, a fast game because that's what they'll be used to. You know, we're expecting smart players too. So, you know, we're expecting a tactical game as well. So it's going to be a little bit of all the above. And, you know, in the early part of the year, you know, we hope to be a little bit more ready than them with having two exhibition games as well.
I'll admit that when I looked at your schedule, Coach, I saw a September 13th match against Portland State in Boise. Is that a little, like a little mini tournament? What is that?
Well, it was an opportunity for us to get an opponent with Boise hosting the postseason tournament. So get a game there because we were hoping that it would fall on our regular season, but Boise actually comes to us this year. So it was an opportunity to get a game at their pitch and kind of create a home away from home so that when we expect to be at the postseason tournament in Boise, we already have set up
that,
camp.
That's pretty good. That's pretty crafty. I think that's very cool. Lastly, Coach, we talked about seniors. Let's go the other way. Incoming freshmen, are you looking at one, two, none in terms of impact players?
Well, we have a transfer from Pitt who has, you know, a significant amount of playing experience in the ACC. So, again, a good level player there. She's only a sophomore coming from Spain. We have several freshmen, including several from the Central Valley that we're really excited about that have been, you know, dynamic and local high school stars here that we really hope to, you know, contribute and get the community behind as well. And then there's a peppering of other California kids. And we've, you know, basically completely recreated our goalkeeping unit because we only have one returning goalkeeper and three new freshmen. So we've got some dynamic options there as well, and they're fighting every day for the gloves.
I want to throw one more thing at you, Coach. What is the – and I've asked this question among a number of your colleagues at Fresno State. What is the biggest challenge that you and your staff face in recruiting? Because you have a good school in a great area. The weather is fantastic. You have a nice facility. It's, you know, you're in a good conference. Is there a challenge involved? Are there programs in the Mountain West, one or two, that present the biggest challenge, the biggest obstacle to kind of fight over?
I think it's a combination of things. You know, we're blessed and cursed to be in California in terms of recruitment, especially as a state school where we, you know, we want to give the opportunities to as many California kids as possible. But the whole nation comes here to recruit and poach players. So that's probably the biggest challenge is that, yeah, we're looking for the best California kids, but there's a lot of schools all over the country that come in and entice a lot of good ones away. So, you know, getting them here to see, you know, our beautiful facilities and our beautiful campus is the number one step. And if we do that, usually we get a really good response from our prospects once they get here. So.
Well, we're looking for a big year from you. And this is a program you've had success in the past. Last year, a little off. This year, you know, you're off to a nice start with a couple of exhibition matches, but then Thursday, folks, at the Soccer and Lacrosse Stadium at 7 p.m., the Oregon Ducks come in town. Go and support Coach Z and these talented players. Coach, we'll keep our eyes on you this year. We'll check in with you as the year goes forward.
Hey, thank you so much. We'd love to have the whole red wave out.
That's the goal. Thank you, Coach.
All right, thanks.
All right, there you go. Coach Z, Brian Swashka. I think I said it right. One more thing is next. This is the CGP.
You're listening to the Christopher Gabriel Program on 940 ESPN and 940ESPNFresno.com. More of the Christopher Gabriel Program right now on 940 ESPN.
One more thing for you today, and it's going to be where we started. Antonio Brown. So, he wasn't there. I don't know if you just saw this alert come in, Gonzo. He wasn't there. He was there. Wasn't there. Was there. Mike Mayock came out and said, essentially, you're either all in or all out. Drew Rosenhaus said, no, my guy's in. He's in. It's just a safety issue. Antonio Brown was at practice this morning. Well, this just comes in now. He has filed a new grievance against the National Football League in an attempt to wear the helmet that he wants to wear. This is just like the latest grievance. It's the second grievance that he has fired. And I don't care what Pittsburgh Steelers fans and players, I don't care what they think about this. I don't want to see Gruden anymore coming out talking about, we got his back. Because you know Gruden is out of his mind with this.
Oh, definitely. I would be too. But yeah. I guess he's trying to win the grievance for the new helmet that he got. So,
It's just, you know, listen, AB, my man, play some football. You are a great receiver. You're going to be safe with these helmets. Get used to it. You know what? Send a text to Tom Brady. Send a text to Aaron Rodgers. Find out how they managed to climb the mountain and learn how to wear a new helmet. Heaven's sakes. My thanks to Coach Z. Thanks to Cam Morrell, Tony D, Paul Ladwig, and Gonzo doing his usual outstanding job. And to all of you folks, we will see you in 21 hours. Until then, you're on your own.
Your home of the San Francisco Giants, 940.